What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
I'm recording. Good morning.
Good morning.
Wow, we did it. I'm sorry.
We did it. We eventually found a time to talk. You're busy, busy Broadway baby.
I am. In fact, I'm sitting in a place right now which would be the most appropriate place to record a podcast because it is a padded cell in the basement of the St. James Theater.
That great.
I think it's covered in, you know, that foam egg crate stuff. So I think it's where like drum kit people can come and practice and not be in danger of blasting out the rest of everyone else. Anyways,
or like a Broadway singer.
Yeah. I mean, people may be in and out of this room, so you'll hear some commotion, and then you'll get an insider's view of Broadway.
Goodness.
Insider.
When does the show open?
The 24th.
That's just a few days from now.
Literally, 6 days. Wow, that's bad.
Is that previews? What is that?
That's just the opening. That's it. There's going to be 2 days of tech, no previews. And then they're going to do the show 8 times in, like, 4 or 5 days so that they can get all of the 8... You have to, I guess, perform 8 times before the Tony nominations deadline.
And I see.
So they're gonna do it. So they're going to do 2 shows a day several times in a row, which is unusual.
Yeah.
I just noticed that we have a wipe-off
bracket.
A wipe-off calendar pinned to the wall in our little room. Literally pinned to the foam egg crate with safety pins, but it says April at the top, and someone changed it to Slaperl.
Okay. Spirit.
Slaperl.
May the spirit move you.
I love Slaperl. Okay. Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing okay. I just had a meeting that was so, like, spiritually derailing.
Oh dear.
Which I find myself like easily derailed these days as I like really have time to devote to my own work.
Mm.
That like anything puncturing that is so like I feel like I fall down a hole.
Oh dear.
So
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, I mean, in a way, it's, like, a good indicator that I'm, like, working in this other place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That, like, to come back to the reality of this and that is just, like, so disorienting. So, yeah, so that's
what's
happening
today. That sounds unpleasant.
Well, it is, it's literally chilling in the sense of just the, like, the fantasy of, like, being able to make your own work for a living versus
the reality.
What has been my entire life of reality, which is, like, not being able to do that.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, it's really heartbreaking. So,
ugh.
But, you know, push on, which feels more and more humiliating as one gets older.
Tell me about it. I mean,
it's just
this is so the focus of the conversation that Harriet and I are in every day. And it's like, you know, at this point, it's confusing to understand, like, what are the possibilities toward, like, more
art.
Yeah, like more control over the work that we do on a daily basis. And it's just like, well, in order to actually be paid at this point with the skills we have, like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember a conversation with Jennifer Tipton several years ago over a lunch, and I was like, how do you navigate that? How do you navigate, you know, being frequently just like told to do things that you don't feel are right, or that you don't necessarily, or like that you feel there are better solutions to,
right? Or that are just like so kind of pragmatic and dull.
And she was basically like, you know, I just do it because it's not that important. And I'm like, wow. So And similarly, Karen Young, another costume designer I've interviewed for my grad school work, was like, you know what? I don't make a big fuss emotionally, physically over like these things that people ask me to do for commissioned work. She's like, and in that way, when I do have time to do my own work, it's like this incredibly joyful release of like just being able to do what I want. And she's like, and that's what I put like my real energy into.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. I mean,
it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because people do, you know, you do have to work to make money, and work, we would all love ideally for our work to be an expression of our creativity. And but you know, at the end of the day, like sometimes it's just not what work is, and that's okay. And I would love to be more at peace with that. And I'm just saying, speaking out loud to you right now is reminding me of these things, so that's helpful.
Yeah. I think, and what they're saying is that like there's your own work and there's like the jobs you do.
Yes, that's right. There's the jobs you do.
But that's like one approach. And I think what you and Harriet have been doing is trying to like make the work, the jobs you do, be the work that you want to do. Because sometimes right. You actually do get to do that. And that is sort of, that's
wonderful.
A delusion.
Yeah. You know? Well, like, I mean, we've been so
like
lucky.
It's like why Pam is so tricky, because she like represents this thing of like creative collaboration and allowance and space.
Right.
And creative. Well,
and
dynamics,
also, Harriet and I have been lucky enough to be able to kind of create our own little spaces to do that. In a way that, you know, a lot of other designers maybe don't or haven't been given that space or that kind of container to do that. And it's just been a while. It's been a long time since Harry and I have been able to do that. So it just, we need to do another works in process or something just to like.
I think so too.
Yeah.
That's my.
We need to do that. You can talk, Chris.
Hi, Chris,
our associate, Ricky, and assistant are here. They're picking up bags.
Are you podcasting?
Yeah.
They're working.
Chris says hi to
pod. Hi.
And Ricky's not going to say hi to pod.
Absolutely not.
Ricky's so quiet.
Keep it to yourself. You hold on to that.
Yeah. Anyways. That was our work conversation.
Yeah, it's really, I guess the thing of getting older is interesting because it is like a kind of selfish, childish thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
This like art, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So as one gets older, it's like, yeah, it becomes more embarrassing to still be pursuing it.
Well, here's something interesting that I'm kind of learning. Like, being in these big costume shops and in a Broadway environment, you see all the binders from the pieces that other designers are doing. And, you know, right now there's, like, a small handful of designers who just work constantly on Broadway. And so, like, this is a Paul Tazewell piece, this is an Emilio Sosa piece, this is a Susan Hilferty piece, and then over here we have, you know, the occasional Anne Roth or like the...
Wait, why are there binders? What?
Right, so the binders are these things that...
Binders full of women, remember that.
Well, okay. But these are...
That was like a political, but presidential, I don't remember who the candidate was, but they had like binders full of women.
Yikes.
Which I think was like this idea of like women that could be hired to for jobs or something.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, these are binders full of designs for the various like upcoming shows, and like you look through them and it's just like this
But why are they there?
Because the builders are preparing to like make
I see. Yes.
Or have already made the clothes and have the binders as the Bible to like keep in case of anyways. So you can look through these binders and it's like, oh, the monumental amount of work that these designers do, you realize that, like, they find a way to get through it by just getting, sort of stepping entirely away from the art of it in a way, and it turns into more of like a research slash delegation process. So like the drawings are done by someone else, of course, like all the swatching and everything has been done by someone else. Someone maybe even did the research. And so it just becomes this like game of filling in the blanks and also sort of steering a ship that involves a lot of people. So it becomes really just this job, and like the art of design at this scale can get very diffuse because it's like, oh, like so many people are involved in just getting this up on stage to like meet the vision of some director. And so I think a lot of these designers have just come to terms with like, I need to use my energy to delegate and steer, and then this thing gets done. And who knows if it's like representative of like the desires of that designer? Probably not.
Right. Well, I think the people who probably operate and are the most successful, creating the most, in a way, successful work, are probably the people who like are good at doing that job specifically, and maybe aren't like the best designer or like the most creative or whatever, but they like know how to do that process.
They're problem solvers, and like it is, because it is like a giant puzzle, so it's just, you have to be like a judicious problem solver and also like be emotionally removed enough to be like, yeah, we're all gonna do this, it's gonna get done, and I can't like get caught up in like the width of the pinstripe on the shirt, you know. It's just impossible. That's
right.
It's impossible.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, that's where I am today. That's where I am today. I'm in La La Broadway land, and we'll carry on. Anyways, let's talk about other stuff. I want to like not. I don't want.
Well, after we recorded last week, I realized there were like a bunch of things that we didn't talk about, but I don't remember what any of them were. But I did see Love Lies Bleeding, and we didn't talk about that. And I thought it was a nice movie.
what is that? That's the Kristen Stewart one?
Kristen Stewart.
Oh, didn't see it at all.
Action-y movie.
People have been saying it's very sexy.
It is, and there's... actually, I think Baryshnikov's daughter is in it.
Yeah, Anna.
And her character is incredible. I really was obsessed with her.
Can't wait.
And which leads me to the New York Public Library Jerome Robbins Dance Division.
Logical.
The next research fellowship is around Mikhail Baryshnikov in the 50th anniversary of his arrival in the United States.
I saw that and I thought, do I have anything... anything that I could research about that, and I just don't know.
Well, we can't, they aren't doing repeats anymore, so if you haven't done a research fellowship at the library, it's really, you know, the last time I was there I was like so grateful for our fellowship because you get to know the people of the library, like that's like, I don't know, that's my huge takeaway, like being able to go there and feel like it's like your place to be with these other people is really an incredible gift of that fellowship. So, if you, I don't know, have some relationship to Baryshnikov, I don't know, weird.
Absolutely. Sort of, and
I find it a strange subject, but,
well, I think if you're interested in the politics of border crossing, certainly like there's a amazing story there that could be researched about the way that Baryshnikov defected. There's a lot of like, there's big political questions around, you know, his early career. I think it would be interesting.
Fame.
There's
as a topic
to do fame. I mean, the only famous ballet dancer, you know what I mean? And I think that's,
if you love Sex and the City,
that's huge.
Huge.
I wonder what else. Yeah.
Katzbahn? I don't know. Like,
no.
BAC? What else? Movies. I mean, I love movies.
I love the idea of just a whole research fellowship about the various, like, film and television career of Baryshnikov, you know?
Yeah. I mean, fun. Dances that they originated, things like that.
Oh, yeah. That's also like just love. A very interesting topic is like the impact of Brezhnikov's dancing on dance in general. Just because, I mean, I think
the male dancer,
his incredible skill and then his incredible kind of versatility and curiosity had a big impact on how open people were to seeing dance. You know, when Brezhnikov was the director of ABT, he did this really interesting thing that kind of happens in Europe nowadays, but really doesn't happen in the United States, where he brought in a team of downtown choreographer type folks, I'm sure, like at the advisement of Twyla Tharp or whatever, who were basically a part of the company and were there dancing and making dances. And so it was like bringing downtown and uptown together in the way that like the Dance Space platform had proposed in 2015. And Brezhnikov was really thinking about that kind of stuff from a long time ago. And I think was earnestly wanted a more meaningful overlap and a kind of, and wanted to see like where ballet could go with in the hands of these kind of like more intellectual people from outside of ballet. And it, you know, like David Gordon made a dance at American Ballet Theater. You know, things like that were happening. Yeah. Yeah. So
the vibe is like experimental.
Yeah.
And even just like moving into acting and these different mainstream ideas, but then like weird Robert Wilson things and that kind of vibe, theater, live theater. So definitely look into it, apply, join the family, and then you can go to that dinner, you know?
You get to have
which is really the point.
Delicious dinner. That's the point. So $10,000. Let me tell you what it was.
$10,000.
Well, it wasn't that much when I did it.
It wasn't that much when we did it either. But you know, inflation.
They actually account for inflation at the library because they're good people. Okay?
The best.
Anyways.
So Love Lies the Bleeding. I thought it was a night. I thought it was a fun time. It was a good time. Some good performances, like, you know.
Can you watch on your television?
What?
On television, or you went to the theater?
I went to a theater to see it.
I love that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a movie at a theater in quite a while.
I also saw Tarkovsky's Nostalgia in a movie theater, I guess last Wednesday.
When was that film made?
Let's say 1970. I don't know.
Before Solaris?
I don't know. This was one that I hadn't seen.
Was it gorgeous?
It was gorgeous. It's not a favorite, but it is
a movie.
Incredible. It's incredible. And has all the hallmarks of a Tarkovsky film, with like a lot of puddles and, you know, wet, misty, what have you, and gorgeous controlled camera movement. And let's see, what is the year? I'm looking this up. Oh, 1983, no less. I don't know, can I find a, and it's true, I don't know why this movie happened, but it's Italian, and so something was going on where like
they were giving the money.
I assume he was given money to go make a movie in Italy. Mm. Okay, so Solaris is 72.
11 years later.
Yeah, so this is like maybe one of the last movies he made. Wow. Actually, The Sacrifice, which is my favorite movie, is after Nostalgia. Nostalgia.
It's hard to be at home and be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to watch.
Yeah, you just go to sleep. For sure.
I happen just
Well, in this
sleep.
Movie, oh, this movie, there's like this maddening scene towards the end when you're like, really need this movie to be over. This character It's insane. It's like this character has to carry this lit candle across this emptied out pool.
Uh-huh.
And it's just this single shot of him like making it like a third of the way and the candle goes out, and then you follow him as he goes all the way back to the beginning, mm-hmm. and like starts over again,
mm-hmm.
and then makes it like three quarters of the way and a candle goes out, and you go all the way back, and then you do it again, and like this, I found it to be an incredible moment of like synthesized feeling of just like, this has to work. Like, we're like, we are this character. We need this person to get across this area with this candle so this movie can end.
Oh,
like,
wow.
This, the tension of just like, okay, I need this to work so that we can be done with this movie. You know, it was just like, it was a kind of incredible,
yeah.
like, harnessing of kind of frustrated energy. And very Beth Gill with that candle.
Speaking of the candle, you know? I saw the Beth Gill piece again this week.
At Skirball.
At Skirball. Absolutely dazzling. I forgot a lot of it, which was such a pleasure. And also, it sounded really good. It looked, the lighting looked really beautiful in Skirball. I was afraid when I walked in the theater that, like, the lights were going to go out and it was going to feel like I was in a cafetorium, which Skirball can sometimes do.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually just, like, looked really beautiful, and it was very dark, and there's various changes I feel like Beth has made that are so wonderful, and it felt... I really was just struck by how thorough the work is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just felt like the kind of work that would have taken 10 years to make, in a way,
yeah.
because of the level of detail and like how rich each character feels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like weeping at the end when Jennifer and Marilyn are doing their duet with the shoes and the tying and the like sitting on the lap. Yeah. And I forgot about that thing where the lights change from like magenta to cyan to yellow, like over and over again. It's just like so amazingly beautiful with Marilyn's sparkling things.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, while I was watching it, I was like, this is why going to a play is ridiculous, because this is the best play one could ever hope to see. Like, it's strange almost to call it a dance because there's just so much theater. Like, so,
mm-hmm.
and, like, mm-hmm. there is dance, especially, particularly, like, the Maggie section is this, like, incredibly difficult, beautiful dance, but the rest of it, you're like, yes, clearly, dancers would have to execute this kind of stuff because it requires such physical precision, but mm-hmm. it is a play. It's a play.
Yeah, well, it's there's a point where, like, Beth and Jack meet of, like, psychological theater.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah.
The movement is is sort of describing a psychosis of some kind, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in a history, and, yeah, it's bringing a lot of meaning in an abstract way.
Well, and I was thinking about gesture a lot over a period of 2 days, because I'd been to see a Julie Antonozzi show at Triskelion the night before I went to Beth's
right.
show. And it was just like so razor sharp in terms of, this is Julia's show, in terms uh-huh. of like the level of specificity, the level of performance, this like very kind of dramatic, specific lighting and sound design and costume design. And I was like, this is incredibly impressive for like a young person making dance in New York right now. And in that way, it felt very much like Beth Gill in the way that it was very uncompromising, but a different aesthetic universe and a different physical universe for sure, because Julia is exploring the edges of ballet, and Julia is like, what happens when ballet is just like put in a totally different container and approached in an entirely different way, But Julia was also using very kind of explicit gesture, and I don't know if it was coming from a research toward like ballet pantomime, but I had questions about like gesture in that show, because I was like, what is like gesture with the like the arm do for a dance if not to like explicitly tell a story? And then being at Beth's show, I was like, this is all gesture, but it's not, but it's like the entire body being the gesture in the way, in a more like Grammian kind of idiom, where like the body is the gesture. It's not just like the hands telling you something.
But so it's also not, you can right. But it's also not like telling.
Oh, just a second. I have to get some news. Yes.
We're going to head to JPK.
Okay.
Do you want to meet us there?
Yeah. 11, right?
11.
JFK.
JPK.
It's James P. Miss K.
Or as Harriet calls it, John Christian Anderson.
She does indeed call it her.
John Christian Anderson.
And these cookies.
Yeah, take a cookie for the road. I got the best. There's, God. Yeah, two kinds.
Are these the ones I like? One. Yeah. This is the one you turned me on to.
They're really good.
Everybody on the pod.
Anyway, best shortbread cookie in New York, Cafe d'Avignon,
yes,
Cranberry
you
Walnut.
You have to get Miss Cranberry Walnut.
If you're allergic to nuts, don't even think about it.
Because you could have an anaphylactic shock.
Go nuts.
You're going to be dead. So this is going to be all the Tasha stuff plus wings.
Tasha plus wings equals happiness.
Okay. All right, maybe we'll live stream Harriet in so that she can
live stream.
Fuss. Okay. Harriet's unwell today, so she's not participating.
Oh, no.
Okay, I'll see you there.
Bye.
I'm sad to not make the walk with
you.
You
need to get your item.
Ricky, come in.
Ricky's coming in. He's not going to speak, though. He's a mute. That feels rude.
Not going to be involved in this.
Oh, yeah, chocolate chip and shortbread.
I'll see you back.
This is like the well incident last week.
Somebody fall in the well?
No, like how we live streamed you and getting the well.
Oh, right.
You spent $1,000.
No water. No water issues since. That's
really?
My update.
I'm so glad you have full water.
Full water.
Full water.
Bye.
Okay, we'll see you at 11. Well, just by we,
just
I mean
come straight
me.
To the fourth floor. In the bedroom.
Fourth. Okay.
Yeah.
Bye. They're going over
snacks.
To, yeah, I bought snacks for people today to boost morale.
Yeah, it's such a rotten feeling working in a theater.
I mean, that's not what I was going to say.
The whole thing of it is just, like, so depressing. Not looking forward to it.
You know, here's the thing.
Ew!
I'm eating, are you mad? Here's the thing.
What? You're eating.
I've had such joy working in theaters. And the joys I really remember are working in these, like, comprehensive opera houses in Europe where it's like, oh, the orchestra's rehearsing right there. And then across the hall, the wig maker's, like, you know, weaving the wig. And then, like, right... And that, to me, is just, like, such a thrill. Because...
Yeah.
Everybody's there. They're having, like... they're doing the thing they're an expert at. They can communicate with each other in the cafeteria. It's just, like, much more interesting than, like, everybody running around town to, like, grab the things, bring it back to the dark theater where no one has, like, space that can accommodate what they need. It's just very inhumane in New York, I'll say. Inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, that's my two cents about that. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Oh, we're talking about Beth Gill. Oh, Beth Gill.
Dance. We're talking about dance. Yeah.
Apparently, dance. During the Beth Gill show, I heard a little commotion behind me. And some woman...
People were passing out.
No, someone stood up and was just like, this is not right. They were just basically like...
Incredible.
They were like, this is ridiculous. People shouldn't do this to people. As they tried to exit the row, the person they were trying to walk past had like... someone who had difficulty walking sitting next to them, and they said to this woman, I can't believe you're gonna do this right now.
Incredible. I love that.
Yeah.
I should start doing that when I go to, you know, awful Broadway shows and stuff. This is unacceptable.
Well, those shows are...
You should not be doing this to people.
Those shows are so loud, you wouldn't be heard.
It's true. They're set up to be cackled. Hackled? Hickled? Spickled.
Yeah. They're set up so people like you and Lauren Boebert can...
Not a second to think about anything.
Anyways, Julia Antonozzi, Beth Gill, it was a wonderful 2 days of performance seeing.
So great.
And felt hopeful, you know? Someone in their 20s nice. Really, like, being rigorous and determined, and we love that.
Mm.
And the performers Absolutely. In the work were tremendous. Anyway.
It's so hard out there.
It really is. It really is. And so if you want to make a fully produced piece with, like, with your the whole, like, dramatic vision intact, good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck.
There's no advice. There's just good luck.
Or we just, wish like, you, the best. You gotta pound the pavement. You gotta, like, do all the applications. You have to get your name out there. And at the end of the day...
Yeah, no, I do. I really think, like, if you can kind of, you know, protect your making space as much as you can, but then also, like, have there be a space outside of it where you hustle. I really think that is the way. Like, there has to be... Like, you also have to run a business. But I don't think you have to sacrifice your art to business. I hope. That's my fantasy.
Yeah.
Is that like, but I think you do have to still, if you want your work to get out into the world, you have to have a business idea of like how to get it out into the world.
Yeah, totally. Anyways, Jennifer Lafferty, Jordan Lloyd, Maggie Cloud, Marilyn, whose last name's not with me right now. Do you know Marilyn's last name?
Nope.
Anyways, Beth Gill, with her incredible cameo in the piece. It's just an astonishing work. Yeah, that's all. I mean, we talked about it last summer, but I mean...
We really did. I don't know what episode that is, but...
who knows?
Beth Gill, nail-biter.
Bailey Yonkman, who does the costumes for Beth Gill, mad respect. I mean, this is a thoughtful, absolutely uncompromising, talented artist. Tremendous work. I mean, even the little changes that were made in Jordan's costumes, it's just... It's so good. It's so good.
I suspect that show is over now and will never be seen again.
Well, yeah, Beth got rid of the piano. That piano's being put in the trash. Incredibly. Yeah. I thought about, like, if this was Pina Bausch or, like, Trisha Brown or, like, if dance was, like, happening in the way it used to and Beth Gill was actually someone who was supported and given the kind of space that she deserves, that piano would be archived. It would not be getting thrown in the trash.
Absolutely. And this is sort of what I mean of like, it's heartbreaking and it's, and then you have these dumb cunts in the audience who like are so stupid. Like, why did you even come to a show when you're so stupid? Like, well, yeah, because you are an empty person, so this means nothing to you. Did you want me to help you become a person?
Like, from scratch? Why did you come from to scratch? A show if you're so stupid?
Why did you even leave the house if you're going to be so stupid? Oh, because, you know, we're trained to, like, appreciate a Broadway show.
And
if that's what you're leaving the house for...
Excuse me.
Good luck. Anyway, rage.
Rage. Understand.
I think I'm going to go see this new, I don't know how her name is pronounced, Alice Rohrwacher movie, Alice.
I know nothing. Nothing of what you're saying right now. Never heard a word.
But if I do, I'll have more to say about that.
Okay. I can't wait.
Next week. Also, yeah, I don't know what the, you know, by the time movies get up here, they've been out for some time.
Wow. So, I have not been making it to the movies, one might say. But I did get tickets to see Music for 18 Musicians at BAM on May 5th, which I'm really excited about.
This is some Steve Reich.
That's correct.
Third Reich.
I saw it live at Carnegie Hall a couple years ago and was absolutely swept away. I was mesmerized. I was tranced into oblivion. And so I just can't wait. I can't wait. It's just the best.
But that's very exciting.
Yeah, it really is. Tell me what else. Is this it?
The Venice Biennale is happening. I was very impressed by the images I saw of Jeffrey Gibson's show.
Oh, okay. I'll have a look.
And Alex and Andrew are in Venice. And
wow.
It got me nostalgia for it. So I went back and listened to our episode when I was in Venice 2 years ago.
Well, you can funny. You can just watch Ripley and go to Venice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, in a way.
I've never been to Venice.
It's really incredible. I would really...
Interesting. Well, I'm going to Europe in a month, and maybe I'll... Maybe I'll extend and
jump
take a little
down to Venice.
Lone trip to
Gondola.
Venice to float around and
I think I didn't have a I felt pretty like lonely there, I guess. That's sort of my experience.
That's how to feel in Europe. You know, when you're when you're in Europe alone and you're walking the streets of these old cities that have literally not a tree for like there's no tree and you're just like, okay, so like I'm literally alone and I'm on cobblestones and you're like, this is the saddest, most like beautiful kind of Merchant Ivory feeling one can have.
Absolutely.
It's so devastating.
Absolutely.
But there's not a tree, okay? And that's a big part of the experience. You're not gonna see any soil. There's none.
No need.
Old European cities are stones.
Stones, honey.
That was
just stones.
That was pointed out to me by Lindsay Clark, actually, on one of our many, many back-to-back trips to Europe. This, like, in this over this 2 year span with Shen Wei, and I remember one day we were in like Torino, Italy, and Lindsay was like. It was like nighttime. We were walking through the old square. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's dramatic. It's lonely. And she was like, it like really, really gets to me that like there's no tree. And I was like, whoa, there's no tree.
There's no tree.
There's no tree. There's really no tree.
Yeah. It's true. There are these places without trees.
Yeah.
Like Iceland, also. But no, like, ancient.
But that's not, that wasn't man decided.
Different
thing. That wasn't man decided.
That's right.
What else can I tell you that is interesting? I don't really know. It's just been, we've been working on this a lot and something else some, and it's just been like all day.
I love vagueness. I was doing this and that, some other thing, and then you know this other thing. But like, you know,
but it has been like
just, it's been a lot.
It's been a lot, I have to say, and that's fine. I'm good at just like get up and go. It's kind of a nice feeling. But there's these moments where like, then I'll sit on the train and I'll think. I wish I was going 100 stops on this train because I would sleep forever, you know? But I'm really only going 4 stops. And then I'm like,
it's not enough. It's
devastated enough to stand up and get off the train.
You know, I thought, like, I'd really love to go see The Wiz. And then I saw some clips and I thought, that looks terrible.
Oh.
But,
well,
I want
to see The Wiz. Well, that's the thing. Broadway marketing is just another facet of like this diseased art space that Broadway is. So even if the show has like you know, energetic excellence, it cannot possibly be captured by these dum-dums who are making this ugly, stupid promotional material. So, I bet it's fun. I bet it's fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't tell. There's a thing about scale that it looks like a... I don't know. I don't think it's good, but... I would consider going. I would consider going.
Yeah. Move on down the road, you know? I mean, what's not to like?
I mean...
Ease on down? Right,
so then I just end up maybe I'll just rewatch the movie. It's so incredible. Like, it's kind of like an... like, I mean, the ending is insane. Like, it's kind of an unbelievable...
I don't remember.
...film.
I don't remember.
And they're that's like in a factory, and it's insane.
Wow. Okay. I love that.
Incredible performances. Wow.
I'm not going to be able to stay on this call much longer because...
Thank God. I think we should be done. Thank God.
Thank oh my God. God. That's... Yeah, because I do have to go back to work, and the work I have to go to is 10 blocks away, so...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll walk through the mist...
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Tarkovsky's Mist.
Yeah. It's going to be very Tarkovskian.
Keep on working. Keep on working.
Today I wrote a word into a text because Russell's in Paris sending me images from galleries where everything seems to be grayscale. And I said, wow, Paris has made a law of grayscale. And I was like, that place is fascistically chic. And the phone did not want to know what fascistically was. And I was like, it is a word that I am making up right now and you have to accept it.
Did you force her?
I forced.
Yeah.
I forced.
Good, good. Get it done.
Yeah. You're not going to find that in the Wordle, let me tell you what. That was me channeling Beetlejuice in honor of,
let me tell
of
you
the
what.
Impending sequel.
Oh, I did watch some YouTube videos about like the sequel, that's what it's called.
Uh-huh.
And like videos from the town, like the guy went to the town and like, you know, so you get to see construction and they like had to rebuild the house because the original house was also just like a mock-up, you know, whatever, a shell. So they tore it down when it was over, but now they rebuilt it.
Love it.
In the same spot.
That's thrilling.
You know, surprising that someone didn't buy that land and build the house properly.
That is crazy. But, maybe
you know, because like it should be there.
It became like a cultural landmark. They were like, "This is the place where Beetlejuice House was, so you can't build here."
Just grass.
Just in case there's a sequel in 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's almost Beetlejuice. That's Beetlejuice. What is it? 35 years? It's a long time.
Yeah. It's true. Okay.
Are Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis aren't going to be in it? Is that true? That's sad.
I don't know.
I guess they kind of can't be because they would have had to not age. But that doesn't seem to be a problem today because they just CGI people too young. I mean, Harrison Ford was 28 years old in the most recent Indiana Jones. So
yeah,
no problem.
Movies don't need humans anymore.
Oh.
We watched some terrible show on Amazon called like, I don't know, it's like an apocalypse. It was bad. It was really bad.
Oh.
Apocalypse like TV series called something. I can't do it.
How was the world ending? Just quickly.
Nuclear bombs. So in the first scene, there's like a birthday party and like they watch. And so then everyone's like living underground.
Yeah, I heard about this a little bit.
This is a bad show.
Well, unfortunately. You know, they make them for like $35 and then they just like turn into a video game and you're like, okay.
Oh, it is a video game.
That's what it is.
It's a video game show. So like it's unfortunate because then it like just kind of falls apart because it's based on something that I'm sure has installed. That's entertainment.
That's entertainment. Okay, bye. I love you.
Love you. Have a good day. Really loves you.
Oh, we love you. Bye.